How are we? Awesome. So good to see you guys braving the cold weather. It's been very cold and miserable, but it's nice and warm in here, isn't it? Yeah? Not bad? Oh, it's warmer than out there, I guess. Well, as you know, tonight and over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about relationships. And it's so awesome to see there's some single people here as well. And predominantly the course, you know, does steer toward marriage, simply because that's kind of the ultimate in terms of relationship challenges, as well as highs. But we will be, you know, I just want to encourage you also as a single person that a lot of this stuff does relate to everyday relationships, whether it's friendships, family, what other relationships, any types of relationships. And was anyone here at the last one? I did one a few years ago. I don't think, oh, Joe was here. Okay. Wow. She's back for more. That's a good sign. the last one I did was based on a program or a course called Boundaries, which is by Cloud and Townsend. Has anyone heard of those guys? Joanne? Awesome. So those guys are super duper psychologists and they're very, very good at what they do. I'm going to be using some of that material over this course. I'm not going to use all of it. As I did last time, but I really like the concept of boundaries and relationships. Does anyone know what a boundary is? Oh, sorry, I should say, does anyone not heard of boundaries? No, good. The word boundaries can be a little bit off-putting. I don't know about you guys, but when I hear boundaries, I go, oh. But it actually represents so many more things than just a boundary. That one word represents a whole bunch of different dynamics in relationships. So, and I have found it to be the best angle in terms of, you know, looking at and learning about relationships. So there's going to be a little bit about boundaries. You'll be hearing a little bit about that as we go. And I'm going to throw in a little bit of psychology stuff, not too much, just some theories that I also have found really, really quite helpful over the years in terms of relationships and how we respond to each other and the reasons why we do some of the things that we do, because we're all very unique creatures. But apart from unique in that the way God designed us, we're also unique based on our life experiences and, you know, how that's kind of all washed out. I'll introduce myself. I think most of you guys know me anyway, but my name's Mona Luxton and I'm a counsellor / psychotherapist, and I've been doing that for about 12 years now. And I've worked in all sorts of different areas, and one of them is relationships. Done a lot of marriage work and so forth, working with families. And I've also been married for 32 years to a very interesting gentleman, which if you guys know him, you know what I'm talking about. He's wonderful, actually. He's not here tonight because he's a bit crook. So otherwise he would have been here with bells on, I'm sure. So I just thought maybe we could start off by just looking at or thinking about some of the things that you guys would like to get out of this course. Is that all right? I'm just going to write some stuff. If you guys just yell out whatever it is, and I'll write it down on the board, and we'll just keep stock of those things, and we'll have a look at them later on just to see. And also just helps me to stay on the mark. Is that cool? Yep. All right, awesome. Any questions before that? Nope. Cool. All right, who'd like to go first? What's one thing you'd like to get out of this course and why you felt to be here? Yeah.
So we have like relationships in general with friends, family, lovers, anything, even spiritual, but there's like a common place among all of which where sometimes our upbringing or certain things make us react in certain ways in certain situations, and our emotional connection to all of those can be different yet somehow connected, especially parentally, how our parents' relationships can interfere with our romantic relationships or even friendships, and also so maybe like just like the connections between like
I'll
just write that one down. So that's actually a theory. That's a theory based kind of question. So we will be looking at that. So
thread kind of thing. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Can we get another mic? Would that be possible, maybe? Thanks, Rach.
I've been married for 37 years and we do it really badly. So I'm here tonight and my husband's not, and I'm wanting to learn how to do it better.
Awesome. I love Sheila. You're just such a brave, courageous woman, and she'll just take on anything and everything and so open. I love that. Okay. So
check.
Maybe how can we do marriage better? Yep. I probably should just give a bit of a disclaimer too, guys. This course is predominantly based on biblical principles. So if there's anyone here who is not a church person or attending church, I just really feel to let you know that. But having said that, it's not like the whole push or the crutch of the actual course, but it is based, you know, on Christian principles, because, you know, with everything that we do, if we have a base, if we have a standard and we have something to measure it by, then it gives us a foundation and it gives us something to go to, you know, to get our answers. And for us here, being who we are, we're obviously about, you know, the Word of God and how He instructs us through Scripture. So sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier. Joanne.
Communication strategies, styles, and how to fight fair, you know, like conflict resolution.
Communication. Another disclaimer, I have really bad handwriting, so I'm really sorry. Conflict resolution. Yep. Anyone else?
For me, it's forgetting the important things that guys tend to forget.
Yep.
And just, you know, ways of understanding the feelings and responses you get when you do things that aren't quite right, and how to interpret them.
Yeah. So understanding of the opposite sex. Now, that's a really big one. That could be a course all on its own. But we will definitely cover it. Anyone else?
I have something just in relation to that. You know, men and women, our brains are wired differently. Even the Bible, you can see the male-female psyche or way of thinking. And often, even though the intention to not, you know, harm or be, like, horrible to the persons, whichever the gender way, the interesting thing is, no matter who it is, the way in which the male and female can conflict, but how to resolve that, gender difference.
Yeah, that's good, yeah. So differences in gender. And there sure are some of those. Anyone else? Oh, yeah.
Hello. I stole a mic from her. Because that's how I roll. I think for me, I'm here to help develop in the area of discernment. Particularly being able to, I'm a very purpose-driven person, and I can be quite willful. So how do you find someone who is going to be able to meet you in that place and actually just both of you be at the same level, equally yoked, and then, you know, so much overbearing in terms of expectations and stuff like that.
Sure, okay. Yeah. So like compatibility type?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chemistry.
Cool. Chemistry. That's a bit more interesting than compatibility, isn't it? I actually don't even know how to spell compatibility, but I'll have a go.
I think that's right.
Yeah, you know. Compatibility. Chemistry has who? To chemistry? Oh, I'm a bad speller, but I'm not that bad, guys. Squeak. Nearly going. Cheeky. Okay, anyone else?
Yeah. So this question isn't for me, but how would you know after years of marriage or, for example, you tried and you've put Jesus in the middle and stuff like that, how would you know when a relationship is just over?
Yeah, okay. So when to stop trying.
When to stop trying.
Okay.
I'm bringing them tough.
Alrighty, anyone else?
A modern-day woman, how does she fall into the biblical terms of being a wife?
Sorry, say again?
Like a modern-day woman who works for herself, is independent.
Yep.
How does she fall in terms of being a wife, like a biblical wife?
Oh, yeah, that's a tricky one. So finding balance. In their role, would you say? Yeah. Cool. Alrighty, that'll only take us about 3 months, but we'll get through all of that. I'm just kidding. All right, so what we'll do is I'll get someone to scribe that for me, and we'll just keep hanging on to that. And of course, it's not set in concrete, so if anyone wants to add anything as we go, please do. Alrighty, how are we going so far? All right. Awesome. Okay, so I'm just going to go to my handy dandy laptop here. Okay, is Rachel up there? Can't see her, she's gone. Oh, thanks, Daniel. So just the next PowerPoint slide, please. Okay, so for tonight, we're going to be looking at values. So there are two main values we're going to be looking at tonight. And the first one is valuing the love of God. So ultimately, I've got Hosea 6:6 up there. So Hosea 6:6 says, I don't want your sacrifices, I want your love. I don't want your offerings, I want you to know me. So the first value we're going to look at is actually knowing God and understanding who he is and understanding the love of God. Okay, next slide, please. Thank you. Can everyone see that? If you need to move up a bit closer. Sorry, it's a little bit small. I am going to give you all this as well. I would have had it tonight, but the printer upstairs is playing up. So ultimately, in a relationship, what you value is what you will have. If you value something in a relationship, you will not tolerate anything that destroys this value. And you will also seek to make sure that it is present and growing. What you value happens, and what you don't value will be absent. So right off the bat, the reason I wanted to start with God is because, what we value in our relationship is really important in terms of working together. And, not everything, we don't have to be exactly on par with every single thing in our relationship. But there are certain things that are of greater importance than other things. And for people that have got a relationship with God, it is an extremely big part of their life. In fact, it's their whole reason for their existence based on, our relationship and our faith in God. So the next point says that Jesus said that the greatest commandment is to love God with every ounce of yourself, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. Mark 12:30. When loving God like that is, or, sorry, my eyes are going funny, orienting principle to life, we are always adjusting to what he requires from us. So one of the values in having a relationship with God is that, we get to know him for who he is. We get to love him, and we also get to understand his ways and the way that he, designed us. Because at the end of the day, if we believe that he's the creator, he created us, he made us, he designed us, then he knows exactly what we need and how we need to go about life that's going to be ultimately the best for us. So when things get tough in a relationship and some change is required from us, We might not want to do it, but if we know that it is God with whom we ultimately have to deal, we submit to this reality and to the high calling to us to grow. In the end, the relationship wins. Having a relationship with God and placing God values on godly principles means that we have accountability. You know, we want to please God, and we want to live life according to, you know, His standards. And so by having that, it's kind of like a measuring rod, and it's a standard that we live by. So when stuff happens in relationships, we're more willing to, because we do want to please God, we have a relationship with God, and we live in the fear of God, where we're more willing to compromise and do what we need to do to change. I don't know about you guys, but left to our own demise, just human to human, it can get pretty rough. And so having God at the centre, it just brings balance, and it's almost like, you know, rather than having to sort of sometimes deal with our own understandings, we can go straight to Him, and He's right in the middle, in between us. So a once hopeless couple that that love God enough to do what God asks of them grow to love each other as a result. The love that they now have for each other is a fruit of loving God. Isn't that cool? I just love that. I love that, you know, it's so simple. But it's His design, and so it works, and it works really, really well. Just going to try and fix this because I'm having a little bit of trouble. I think I already said that. Okay. Sorry, guys. Rachel. This girl is such a whiz. She's amazing. She's just so tech savvy and all the rest of it. I can't. It's split in two pages. Okay, so let's look up here. So loving God must be first priority because He empowers us to change. He tells us how to change, and most of all, He becomes the one that keeps us from being ultimately in charge. If we truly want to be in charge, we will do marriage/relationships our way. And then our own limitations become the limitations of the relationship as well. We all need someone bigger to answer to, so we'll make the changes we are responsible for making. Isn't that cool? I just love that. You know, it's like, where do we turn to when we need some answers for our relationships? Where do we go? Who sets the standard? Who determines, you know, what's okay, what's not okay, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable? And I just love that this is better. Yay, I can read. And I don't know about you guys, but if I was in charge of my life, my life would be a train wreck. I know that my life was a bit of a train wreck before I became a Christian and before I had relationship with God, because nothing made sense to me, absolutely nothing. And it was all just really weird, and it was like, what's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of anything, really? And how does marriage or relationships work in any case? So yeah. Any questions so far? Any thoughts? Any comments? Yep. You got the mic.
So, you know, it's great how with the Bible there's that concept of wicked and righteous, where we can convict our conscience and we can accept the flaws within us. I think that can be quite unique to, you know, Jews or Christians, for example. However, if you're in the world without a Christian endom or a Bible, and you're just running around with just your own, what you know and you believe it's right, and you, again, going back to relationships, not everyone's going to have that, you know, Christian endom or Judaistic kind of backing. They're going to believe they're right, even if they're wrong. And they're not going to make sense, and they never will. But how do you interact with those people?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And it does come down to what each of us values. So, you know, in here, you know, we're a bunch of, because we're around a church, we're not all a bunch of Christians. I'm not, you know, jumping ahead for anybody, but we, you know, predominantly that's who we are and that's what we're about. So we have similar values. And this is where it again, coming back to the importance of having similar values when it comes to relationships. It's amazing the amount of times I've seen, you know, couples really, really struggle because their values are different. And as I said, it's not going to be everything. It's not going to be the same, but the things that are of most significance, because bottom line is, you know, when you come down to it, you're going to go after what you value. You're going to be about that. That's going to be the thing that drives you. It's going to be the thing to motivate you. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but basically when you're talking about relationships, definitely. And I think outside of that, if we're just relating to people in general, then definitely it has to be a mutual respect with that. You know, it's not about forcing somebody to think a certain way or believe a certain thing. That's not on. But it's about appreciating, respecting and valuing others. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so our second value we want to look at tonight is loving others. So, and ultimately this is what this is all about. So, next, Rach. I feel bad giving orders. I need one of those things that you just go like that. Okay. When we don't see what we love about our friends, family, spouse, or when our love disappears, we need to rely on the love that builds relationships. That kind of love is the kind of love God has for us, and it's called agape love. Has everyone heard of agape love? Agape love speaks the welfare of the other. It is love that has nothing to do with how someone is gratifying us at the moment. Instead, it has to do with what is good for the other. In short, agape love is connected with the good of the other person. So right there is a really key point, guys. So throughout this whole course, that's what we're going to be looking at. And often when we come into relationships, whether they're friendships or any other type of relationships, we all have needs, right? Am I the only one with needs? I've got needs. So we've all got needs, and quite often in relationships, for different reasons, we might come into it going, well, this is what I need, and you know, I expect that my partner's going to provide that for me. And, you know, whereas agape love talks about going into a relationship and asking what does the other person need? What are their needs? So it's about prioritising others first. And that can be really hard, guys. It's easier said than done, but it's really, really hard. And so that right there is where the challenge lies. So the second greatest commandment, Jesus said, love your neighbour as yourself. How hard is that? Is it just me that struggles with that? I don't know about you guys. That's hard. In relationships, loving someone as yourself means first to so deeply identify with your them. That's really good English. Identify with them, that you think about and even feel the effects of your own behaviour on your other person. Is that typo up there? Sorry. That's shocking. I have been sick. Thank you, Sheila. Okay, so did everyone get that? So to so deeply identify with them that you think about and even feel the effects of your own behaviour on that other person. This identifying with excuse me, another's experience is called empathy. Empathy empowers you to seek the best for that other person because it puts you in touch with them, with her or him, with their life and how it feels to be them, especially on the other end of a relationship with you. So it's like stopping for a minute and going, gee, I wonder what it would be like to be in a relationship with me. I wonder what it's like for that person to be on the other end of this relationship. And really thinking about that and, you know, how they may be affected by some of the things that we do or say. So when you feel the other person's need as your own and you sacrifice to meet it, you also find joy in the happiness, fulfillment of what they find. So seeing them happy makes you happy. Seeing others happy makes us happy. Thirdly, and this is often the most difficult aspect of loving others as yourself, loving your neighbour as yourself means you want the best for them. And even when you're that, when that person can't see what that is. Oh, this is really terrible. Sorry, guys. Andrea's laughing because she knows how bad I am with my grammar. I know. Oh. We've moved on. So that's what I just read out. Okay, so most difficult aspect of loving others as yourself, loving your neighbour as yourself, means wanting the best for them. And even if that person can't see what that is. In addition to being based in empathy, agape love is based on commitment. To commit to someone means that you will stay even when things get difficult. In marriage, for example, commitment provides the time, structure, and security needed for growth and change to take place. Commitment keeps the patient on the table until the surgery is finished. Ouch. Yeah. Quite a bit of surgery happens in relationships. Some more serious than others. But it definitely is worth it staying on the table until it's over and you recover. Commitment both provides the security necessary for growth and drives the need for growth and resolution. As important as commitment in a marriage is the element of action, love is not just a feeling for attachment to a person. It is an expression of that attachment. So true love will not allow itself to grow cold. When love begins to cool, there is a call to action. So it's so important to monitor our relationships. The relationships are like anything, guys. Like the more we spend time on them, the more we nurture them, the more we care for them, the more we, you know, just give up our time for them, the better they're going to be. And, you know, some of you probably heard it's a bit like, you know, driving a car and never putting petrol or oil or water or anything like that in it and just expecting it just to keep on going. And it just doesn't. It conks and carks and it's really quite sad. So it's no different with a relationship. Revelation 2:5, the need for action in a love relationship never goes away. So sometimes we can get to a point in a relationship and think, oh, we're pretty good. it's all good, we're going good, and we kind of slacken off on what we need to do to keep it, you know, tuned, and that's when it can become quite dangerous. So just a key word in this is empathy. And that is that empathy is deeply identifying. It's not up there. Ha. With how your partner is feeling or your friend. In order for us to develop empathy, we have to be aware of how our behaviour is impacting our spouse. Okay, so we're going to just have a little bit of a discussion, guys. Is that all right? So I'm going to get used to break into groups of maybe four. And we're just going to look at agape. Agape is love that seeks the welfare of the other person. It is love that has nothing to do with gratifying us in the moment. It has to do with what is good for the other. Okay, so two questions there. Oh, three? Oh, no, two. Question two and three. I've got one and two on my laptop, so it's gremlins in the system. Okay, so when you're ready, guys, it's a good opportunity to introduce yourselves if you haven't met each other before. Just say hi. Groups of four or five, whatever works. And just in your kind of area where you're sitting. Okay, so just in that first question, it says, how does agape love differ from worldly or humanistic love? And how can we facilitate a change toward agape love? Now, it says in our marriage, but that's relationships. Okay, so just looking at relationships as a whole. How can we facilitate a change towards agape love in relationships? So remembering it's about empathy, it's about valuing others, how does agape love differ from worldly or humanistic love? And how can we facilitate a change toward agape love in relationships? Okay, just one more minute on that question. Sorry, I think I scared a few people. I'm going to be asking a representative from each group as well, just to... Yeah. Okay. So what we might do before we go on to the second question is I'm going to ask someone from each group just to share with us what you've come up with. So vote for your representative. Who'd like to go first? Which group? Anybody, anybody? Anne?
We talked about agape love being the opposite of what the movie sort of portray, and we just talked about how that English is a bit limited in that Greek has more than one word for love. And so that romantic love, which is eros in the Greek, is a different thing. It's the butterflies and the lovey-dovey and all of that. But it's agape that keeps a relationship together, just like the love you would have for your child or your mother or your father, that love that that goes beyond a disagreement, it goes beyond, you know, getting angry with each other, you still love each other. It's that solid foundation that underpins things. And we talked about how that is God's love for us, his model, and that when we are receiving that from God, we are able to allow each other to be imperfect in a relationship, because we're not trying to extract happiness and all of life from our partner. We're actually getting that from God. And so our partner can be human and we can love each other together and be imperfect. So that was kind of how we tackled the idea of commitment. And we also discussed that safety and commitment that you have in that agape love is something that is better and that will take you through, you know, till you die. It's not just that romantic lovey-dovey moment. It's something much deeper and more than that, and it's something that you can fall into and that you can lean into and that you can make mistakes into and still be safe.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really deep, guys. You guys just went there and you... Fantastic. Well done. Very, very good. And it's so true. And, you know, as I think we mentioned a little bit earlier, it's love is more than just a feeling. There's so much more to it. Okay. Who'd like to go next? Oh. Sheila.
We talked about how God loves us and that we're actually not all that lovable sometimes, but he loves us anyway. So it's that thing of it being absolutely unconditional. And that when we look at the people in our life and they're kind of being difficult, God still loves them. And so when we look at them and try, when we try to look at people who are difficult in our life through the lens of God and acknowledge that he loves them unconditionally, that can sometimes change our heart and it can change the way we relate to them, and then that changes how they relate to us, which is just mind-blowing.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Thank you. Well, we've got some shy people in this group.
Yeah.
They're not really shy, but...
Yeah, we discussed agape love as well. I'm not as deep as these guys, man. It's just out there. It's good. Love it. How we kind of went into the question a bit, you know, how does agape love differ from worldly or humanistic love? And, you know, the notion of commitment obviously straight away comes up, but it's also... you know, the empathy and wanting to look after your partner and then having that reciprocated is like just a much better way. And then we discussed what if it's not reciprocated, and some examples came up. And that then really led us into the next one, which is a commitment, and it led us to the question of how long do you stay, and maybe the question is, well, can you stay longer? And maybe we should try stay longer. But then it came up as well, when the cup is just absolutely, absolutely full and nothing more can be tolerated, then, you know, you need to look at either changing or something else. So, yeah, we just discussed around those two questions in that way.
Awesome. So you guys have done the second question as well. You're miles ahead. Thank you. Thanks, Phil.
We said pretty much what has been already said. I don't know what else we could add.
Good on you, Margaret. Okay. Taking one for the team.
So we're talking about, guys, we're talking about things like the love that we feel for our children and how that's similar to agape love. What else did you talk? We're talking about relationships that of other people that we know, and how manly love or worldly love can be very, it's like man-made, in that a lot of it is what we see around the world, like even on TV and the people around us, and we find that those relationships are the ones that don't last. As with agape love, is love that we see from the Bible as a template. There's so many examples of where God shows us love, and then there's the ultimate love where, you know, he's sacrificed his son for us. Was there anything else? I think that's pretty much it.
That's awesome. Okay. Wow. Way to go, guys. Thanks, Kerry.
You're right. Yeah, we pretty much said the same thing as you guys. Agape love, like worldly love, we said is like selfish and seeks personal gain, kind of. And agape love is loving no matter what, just when you don't feel like it, I guess. And how can we facilitate a change towards agape love? Just seeking God always and letting him lead your relationship and just having a mindset of others and the other person rather than on yourself, I guess.
Yeah. Awesome. Fantastic. Wow. That's everyone. Awesome. Well done, guys. And you know, the pattern here is, as you probably noticed, is that it really does come down to switching it, you know, around. And, you know, in our kind of human nature, we do tend to naturally sort of go toward self-seeking, fulfilling, self-fulfilling, whatever it is that our needs are. And that's often one of the main causes that you know, causes relationships to fall, whether it's, again, marriages, friendships. And, you know, we know that in friendships it's important to also have a two-way kind of approach, but it's not always about what's in it for me. It's not always about that. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more as we go about, you know, challenges in relationships and in marriages in particular. And, you know, I think someone asked the question, when to stop trying. And that's a really difficult one. We are going to talk about it, but obviously there are reasons for couples to stop trying. There's some very serious reasons for couples to stop trying. And one of the areas that I also work in is in abusive relationships. So I've seen relationships that really need to stop trying. So please keep in mind that whenever we're talking about hanging in there and all that sort of stuff, we're talking about where there is safety in a relationship and where we haven't crossed the line in terms of what God, you know, deems to be a marriage. As I said, there's so many things that we, you know, there's so many different angles and different pathways when you're talking about relationships. But I'll just keep giving these disclaimers because I don't want at any point for anyone to sort of misunderstand the way we're coming across with this here. But ultimately, if you're in a relationship where you've got two people that are committed and who walk in empathy and understand agape love, which is about the other person first, then you've got a pretty good recipe right there to really hang in there and make your relationship work. Is that cool? Well done. Do you guys want to have a break or do you want to keep going? Do you want to have a coffee? There's some biscuits and stuff out there, some Tim Tams. And yeah, how are you all going? Why don't we take 10 minutes, hey? Just grab a coffee or a tea and then we'll come back and we'll go to question number two. Okay, just grab your seats, guys, and we'll get back into it. Okay, so the other question was about commitment, and just for time's sake, we won't go into that one tonight. It is a very important one and I'd like to give it some time. So we'll look into it a little bit further down the next couple of weeks. So if we can go to the next slide, please, Rachel. Okay. So basically, just in terms of what we talked about tonight, just to try and kind of wrap it up a little bit, it's about having compassion. It's about being tender of heart, and it's about forgiveness. And, you know, agape love represents all of those things, and it certainly represents forgiveness. So the people that you love the most are imperfect beings. Shock horror. They are guaranteed to hurt you. That's a given. There are no exceptions for that rule, guys. I'm sorry. And they are guaranteed to fail you in many ways, some serious and some not so serious. So what do you do when people you love fail you in some way or are less than you wish them to be? What do you do with that? The Bible says that love covers a multitude of sins. 1 Peter 4:8 says nothing in a relationship Nothing in a relationship has to permanently destroy a relationship if forgiveness is in the picture. No failure is larger than grace, and no hurt exists that love cannot heal. For all of these miracles to take place, however, there must be compassion and tenderheartedness. Does anyone here believe that? Yeah? One person? Two? Oh, yeah, okay, there's a few. Now, just again, a disclaimer, when I say nothing, okay, we're staying within the realms of what's realistic, what's doable, okay? Okay, tenderheartedness consists of identification with sin and failure, identification with weakness, a willingness to become vulnerable again, and a willingness to repent. So what keeps us soft is our own understanding and awareness of our own shortfalls. You know, the more we realize how imperfect we are and how much we need compassion and how much we need forgiveness, the more it helps us to have empathy and understanding and compassion and forgiveness for others. It's just the way it works. Compassion, tenderheartedness, and forgiveness ensure that imperfect people can experience love and relationship for a long time. Hey, I've been married 32 years, guys. You know. Yeah, come on. Thank you, Sheila. I won't tell him you said that. So as Paul says in the Bible, clothe yourselves with the qualities of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Okay, so we'll stop it there. Has anyone got any questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah?
Thank you. Thank you. So you know, love is like this concept. Some of us know what it is, some of us don't. I'm learning. But there's this idea of, maybe this is more related to relationships, the romantic kind of marriage. Power is that idea of abandonment. And if somebody has a standard, and if you don't meet their standard, there's this thing, well, if I can't tolerate it or if I can't, then I'm going to abandon you. And it can go both ways, but sometimes men might put it over you and it's like, look, it's just this selfishness like this or whatever it is that's just not good enough for them. And it's obviously nothing to do with safety. It's got nothing to do with like that. It's just this random, you don't satisfy me, I have no idea, but it's just an unreasonable thing. There's that threat of abandonment, and there's that fear, that easy fear in the modern world of, you know, maybe in ancient times there's that culture, a different culture, but in the modern world there's that fear. Men have it a lot too, but there's this like a financial perspective. If I get divorced to the wrong woman, I'll lose all this or that, whatever. It's very monetary, but women, it's emotional, it's psychological, it's deep-rooted, it can be traumatic. So there's this, again, like it goes back to the way we think so differently. And then there's men who claim they have feelings and emotions, but they oppress it and hide it, and they think, oh, it's just a male thing, but we're human beings, we make our own choices, and there's people that just, there's that lack of honesty. And I've met it in my life time and time again where I'll meet males, I'll date them, or I'll know them, or I'll be friends with them, and then I'll think about that aspect of, oh, I wonder if we're soulmates or something, and then I'll see, like, I don't think this person's honest. I just don't. And that is enough to, in itself, to, it would be an absolute deal breaker, and it hurts. It just gets deep rooted in your emotions, your psyche. And there's that element of abandonment. I feel like mine's reasonable. It's my welfare and well-being. I'm coming from that place. But with men, it's just like this selfish expectation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know. Yeah.
Wow, that's power packed right there. Yeah. What do you reckon, guys? Oh, we've got a hand up. Oh. Okay, let's pass the mic back.
Thank you. So I like this one because I wanted to touch on it as a single person who has been divorced and has been trying to date of late, not trying anymore. And I wanted to address it because I think if we go back to the part where we discussed empathy and how the other person feels, and maybe we can touch on this from one single person to another, and how the experience for some guys, or at least a guy like myself, has been. And the experience that you're describing is something that I've become familiar with when in trying to date women in this, I won't say in this age, but I will definitely say in the age of this society and this culture and the way that you interact with each other as human beings. And the narrative, whether you're watching TV or whether you just hear people speaking in general, and it tells you a lot about the relationship between men and women. And I think as a culture, particularly in Australia, it's a culture whereby it's naturally ingrained that there's a distrust between the sexes. And it has a lot to do with a lot of overdetermining factors, the history, whether it's the history of domestic violence, whether it's a history of the political structure and the way that women have been treated, and how the authority has been, you know, it's a very patriarchal society. And these are issues that are everywhere in the world, but we're here in this community discussing this. Now, the challenge now for a person like myself, I was raised in Zimbabwe until I was full grown, a different community altogether. You guys know the women in my family, Deborah, Mom, and if you see me next to them, it is very clear that my upbringing is actually quite the opposite context to being a patriarchal society. So you actually find that's why they talk about Mother Africa, in the sense that if there was going to be a godhead, God would be a her. Okay, so
wow.
Okay, so there's a reason why I'm sharing this, because first of all, that experience, what I'm trying to say is that experience, that when we're talking about how men are and how women are, it has a lot to do with the society that you're living in and the context, the way you've been nurtured. So you have to be careful when you're interacting with a man and you're trying to answer the question, what is the nature of a man? Because if you're really looking into a lifetime relationship with someone, you have to ask yourself, in fact, you have to understand what is the nature of a man. So you look for a natural man or a natural woman. And then in meeting a natural man or a natural woman, you have to ask yourself, what is the nurture of this individual? And so you now find that when you find yourself in an abusive relationship where the opposite sex is abusing your sex, it has a lot more to do with your nurture versus the nature of a man. And the nature of a man, I believe, that comes from the identity of God. The nature of a woman comes from the identity of God, who God is, love. Yeah? So, now, coming to you, Miss Lady, now to answer your question with that background, the experience, actually, it's actually not true that men grieve a lot when it comes to relationship. As a matter of fact, Jerry knows what I'm talking about. Many times he dropped me off, drunk, crying, in his car. I was. Yes. Grieving from a relationship, particularly this particular divorce. So we are always very emotionally invested. As a matter of fact, the experience is that, from our perspective, is that we don't have a platform as women do in this society to speak about their grief. We don't, and we can't address it. It's a very, very lonely place to be a man. So you actually find that when you engage across that, Mona can help. That's why I'm here. Yes. So when you engage across that, I think first of all, it's the challenge now in this world, and how do I now address the insecurities that I'm experiencing or the distrust that I have, and so forth. And I have had to face the same challenge. First, you have to criticize the society that you live in and what it's taught you to understand about the opposite sex. And then from that point, you'll only be able to express yourself and actually dictate the kind of relationship that you want with the other person, mm-hmm. and not have the relationship that society thinks you should have mm-hmm. with the other person.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and I think definitely it comes down to as what we talked about before, and that's about values. And, you know, courses like this, you know, pre-marriage counselling, all of those sort of things, you know, I just know that sometimes people just don't invest in those things. They don't take the time. They might think, I don't need it or whatever. But in order to resolve so many of these things, that's what it comes down to, is working all of that stuff out prior to committing to somebody and you know, doing the best that you can to get an understanding of what their values are, where they're heading, what their beliefs are, what their worldview is, how they see the world, their, you know, perspective on the roles of male, female, all that sort of stuff. So great discussion here and very big issues, and some of the stuff that we will be covering as we go, so things like honesty and trust will be coming up a little bit further down the track. And
I just want to extend on what you were saying about nurture. That's where your citizenship comes into view. So your citizenship as a member of the kingdom of God is a different citizenship to what you have on the earth, and that's what equalizes all of these things.
Yeah.
It's where if you are a Christian, if you're not, whatever, but if you are and you're trying to date somebody who's not, you've immediately got a culture clash, because your expectations of each other is going to be very different. And we've been married a long time. We've seen people go in and out of relationships very much for that reason. Like I mentioned before, people are going to try to extract happiness from you because they're not getting it from God. And then you're trying to fill Jesus' shoes, which is big shoes to fill, or sandals, or whatever they were. But so that's the thing. That it's very much what you said. It's about culture, and your culture changes when you become part of the kingdom of God, the kingdom culture.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're meant to be...
That's right.
Equally yoked. Yeah.
It's that measuring rod, and it's what we go by. Thanks, Anne. Okay, I want to wrap it up. I'm just conscious I know some people need to go. I'm going to hand out some little questionnaires, and what these are about is I haven't got time to go right into this, but has anyone heard of attachment styles? The term attachment styles, Joanne. Okay. Attachment styles have a lot to do with our childhood upbringing, how we attach to our main caregiver. And so often whatever that style is ultimately how it plays out in your relationships. This is very, very well researched psychology theory. And it just helps to get a bit of an understanding when we know what our attachment style is. Oh, thank you. And the reason why we may respond or react in a certain way to other people in relationships. So it's really interesting. You're not going to be able to do much with it until you come back next week, but please do fill it out and bring it back next week, and then we'll go through and explain what it's all about. Is that all right? As I said, it's too big for me to go into right now, but you will find it really, really interesting, trust me. Okay, next week we're going to be looking at the rights, so people's rights in a relationship. Who's got what right? Who's in charge of who, and who does what, and who says what, and who obeys, and who gives out the orders? How does that sound? I'm trying to make it sound juicy. We're going to be looking at rights. Rights in a relationship, very, very important. And one of the things that I think, even what we've just heard tonight, you know, some of the questions around what is our position in a relationship, what's our perspective of each other as male and female, and all of that sort of stuff. So all really, really interesting stuff. So, guys, I encourage you to be here. I just want to, again, just commend you for coming. And I think, you know, to take the time to invest in relationships is invaluable. And there's, you know, there's information here that is just so well studied and researched, and it really works. So I encourage you to come to all the four sessions. We've got another three. And don't miss out on any of them, because you're going to find them really, really helpful as we go along. Cool? Awesome.